Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, you've got some new outfit energy today. You want to explain to me what's going on?
Erin, look, I am no different than I was in middle school and high school. I ordered something new for fall and I couldn't wait. Even though it's hot out, I am wearing it today. Just like my little, remember CB, the brand CB?
I don't.
Okay, but so CB used to make like anoraks and like ski clothes.
Sure.
And growing up, you would go, so back before climate change, the last week of August was always like gorgeous up here. And you'd have like, it'd be like, you know, 60 degrees at night when you'd go to the county fair and everyone would wear their new stuff for school. And so anyway, I'm wearing my back to school clothes today.
Oh my gosh. I used to, after I went back to school shopping, and like just begged and pleaded. It was just a day-long negotiation with my mother to try to get her to like let me have like nicer stuff than we could afford. But I would get home and lay out my first day of school outfit.
Yes.
And it would go untouched.
Did you guys have layaway?
Yes, but I don't think we ever used it.
So we had we were big time layaway people. So I would like visit my back to school clothes all summer. Until we picked them up off of layaway at the end of August.
I love that.
I'm just so into it right now. It's like just a little something. So what? I'm wearing flannel in August.
All right. This week, Alyssa, we had a really fun show. It's kind of a stripped down version of the normal Hysteria crew.
Yeah, but we're bouncing around everywhere.
We're really, we're talking a lot about abortion. We're talking about Ohio, which is
always
huge.
Texas.
We're talking a little bit Texas, which is like not so great, but still some progress being made. We're talking to the creator of a podcast about the history of the abortion pill that honestly turns the whole story into like an action movie, and we're here for it.
Incredible. We loved every minute.
Okay, now let's get to the news. Okay, folks, you're listening to Hysteria, the podcast where women are my favorite guy. Are you in that?
Absolutely.
Yes, women are my favorite guy, and that should have been the tagline of our podcast from jump. I am ashamed.
Well, you know what? We're always iterating, Erin, and we are here to learn and grow with every year and podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. Normally, we kind of banter a little bit at the top of news.
Yeah.
But I feel like we should really take advantage of the fact that we're currently in what we call our gloating closet.
We're in our gloating closet because we have, I don't know, some stuff to gloat about.
Some stuff to gloat about. This is a rare but welcome and joyful moment when I'm like, huh, way to go, Ohio.
What do you know?
You guys did it. So, Alyssa, what went down in Ohio on Tuesday? And why are we gloating about it?
I am happy to report that Republicans were utterly fucking destroyed in Tuesday's Ohio special election. Or, as you like to say, curb stomped.
They were curb stomped. It's true.
They were curb stomped. Ohio voted no, overwhelmingly, on a measure known as Issue 1 that sought to make it more difficult to amend the state constitution at the ballot box. As of our recording right now, Erin, Wednesday morning, the vote stands at 43% yes, 57% no. What do you know about that?
That is a bigger margin than the Protasiewicz curb stomping in Wisconsin.
Yes.
The margins keep growing.
The margins speak for themselves, Erin. Abortion wins elections, okay? How long have we been saying this?
Since the show started.
Yes.
And
abortion
winning them since
wins elections. And we talked last week, nearly 700,000 Ohioans voted early, either in person or by mail, surpassing the amount of early votes 288,000 people cast in the May 2022 primary election.
Oh, that didn't even surpass. That didn't just surpass it. That
it
like blew it out
of the curb stomped
water.
That too.
It blew that out. Oh my gosh!
And
that's so
for
many
comparison, Now this is this is not apples to apples, which makes it even better. The 2022 general election total was 4,200,000 votes. As of this morning, in a special election in August, Over 3 million votes have been counted, with over 99% of the vote in.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
What?
Yeah.
What? Erin, turnout was so heavy that some election offices were straining to manage the load and tried to recruit additional poll workers.
Wow. Okay, so issue one failed. Yay. We've been talking about it for a few weeks. Ohioans showed up. They did not come to fuck around. So what happens now? So this isn't the vote on abortion access.
No. So just for anyone who has not been following this closely, issue one was meant to, the Republicans wanted issue one to pass so that in order to amend the state constitution, you would need a threshold of 60%, not the current 50% plus one, right? So that failed. So now come November, abortion, enshrining abortion into the Constitution is on the agenda, and we just need 50% plus one.
Mm-hmm. And what's super interesting is that polling has shown pretty much reliability that between 57 and 60% of likely Ohio voters support access to abortion.
Yes.
But if the referendum fails in November, it's also on the ballot with legalizing recreational marijuana.
Yep.
Pretty cool. Oh, I wanted to really quick talk about how issue one, another way that it was like snaky, you know how Republicans will try to make things, rules that only apply to abortion or only apply to birth control. And they've gotten away with it a bunch of times, like, you know, so why not this time? Issue one was designed to raise the threshold to 60% to get things in the state constitution.
Right.
So it wouldn't have applied to the marijuana law, which was just changing state law. So it was like, not only what they didn't even have like plausible deniability to be like, we just don't want direct democracy. It's too chaotic. No, they literally were just targeting this abortion referendum that's on the ballot in Ohio in November, which is pretty crazy. If it fails, this is why the stakes are as high as they are. If it fails, that it looks like a 6-week abortion ban that was passed and enacted by the state's gerrymandered, extremist right-wing state government, which, by the way, is out of step with how most Ohioans, you know, think and believe. It's just they've been gerrymandered all the fuck. The 6-week abortion ban will probably go into effect, unless a court strikes it down. But you don't want to rely on the courts, guys.
No.
Take democracy into your own hands.
And you know what else is a little glimmer of good news in all of this? Erin, people do not like extreme positions on abortion. We're seeing this across the country. And it's good news for Sherrod Brown, who is on the ballot. He is up in cycle, and his potential opponents have very, very extreme positions on abortion. So it feels like there might still be a path for his reelection.
Yeah, and Ohio is, the more I've been reading about Ohio, the more I've been, you know, studying up on this, it seems to me as though Ohioans like issues that Democrats care about, but they don't like Democrats.
That's correct. You're correct.
Yeah. But they do like Sherrod Brown because he's gotten elected, I think, a few times now. So, you know, I've got a mostly sunny outlook on his.
I'm feeling
election.
Positive.
Yeah. Mostly sunny. So something else super interesting about this is that this is like, I don't know, the fifth time that abortion bans or abortion restrictions have been voted on by the general public in red states since Dobbs was overturned. I know that's a lot of caveats, but we had Kansas, Kentucky, Montana, and Wisconsin. And in all of those scenarios, voters opted for the choice that did not restrict abortion. So, Kentuckians had the opportunity to enshrine an anti-abortion clause in the state constitution. They rejected it. Kansas did not remove the right to abortion from the state constitution. Like, it is, all of these states are still trying to fuck around with bans, with maybe the exception of Wisconsin, because that state is an abortion desert's days are numbered with a 4-3 state Supreme Court. But, you know, it's Republicans should be worried, but they're not. And, you know, something else interesting I found out about this is that Ohio is one of 10 states that significantly restricts abortion and allows citizen-sponsored ballot initiatives. So the others are Arkansas, Florida, Missouri, Montana, which we mentioned, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And there have been rumblings, well, they're not just rumblings, something was filed in Arizona on Tuesday that yes. indicated that they are attempting to go through the process of getting a pro-abortion initiative on the ballot in Arizona in 2024, which we coming, you know?
Fuck around and find out.
Fuck around and find out. And, you know, these other states are in, you know, various stages of trying to figure out how to get this done. I know in Missouri, the state government has been trying to play defense on mm-hmm. The rights of their citizens to add, like, public referendums. I know that in South Dakota, there have been some talk about getting a pro-abortion language on a public referendum. But the one where it's the furthest, now that Ohio has done what it's done, Arizona is the furthest along. So we're going to be keeping track of this.
Yes, we will.
Heading into 2024. Because the energy's on our side now, man.
I can feel it.
And there's another thing that happened this week that was interesting. Interesting. CNN released the results of a poll about attitudes towards the Dobbs decision, which was the decision mm-hmm. that overturned Roe v. Wade. And they found that the percentage of people who say they disapprove of the Supreme Court, the Dobbs decision specifically, right. is exactly the same as it was in the weeks right after Dobbs. So there were some people that were saying, well, you know, people will just get used to this and gradually right. like accept the new – people are not getting used to this. People are not accepting this.
And thank God.
It's like good for Democrats, good for pro-choice voters. I mean, it really sucks that there has been this period of time where we, you know, all of these people are falling through the cracks. There's something so cruel about the ways that many states are handling reproductive justice issues. But on the other side of this, we might end up in a future where people, on average, have more access to abortion than they had before.
I mean, fingers crossed. I think, Aaron, so much of what the Republicans did, it's like they're the dogs that caught the car. You know, mm-hmm. they got what they wanted, but they didn't have a plan. And they really, really just went too fucking far. Like, I don't care how you feel about abortion, but when you listen to the stories of women who have been denied abortions because doctors and healthcare clinics and hospitals were too afraid to treat even dire circumstances where people's lives were at risk because they thought they'd get sued.
Like, or I arrested think that, or worse.
Or arrested. Or exactly. I mean, it is I think they overplayed their hand here, Aaron. It's going to come back and bite them.
And on that note, last Friday, a Texas judge issued an order barring the state from enforcing its ban on abortion after about 6 weeks of pregnancy in cases where a patient's life or health could be endangered by an emergent medical condition. It was ruled that the state's abortion ban has been too restrictive and has mm-hmm. led to women with serious pregnancy-related complications to endure unnecessary medical risk. And the judge's order basically asked for some clarification. It was like, hey, guys, you can't – this law is ridiculous. It doesn't
right.
clarify that doctors are able to take care of their patients, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And the ruling was the first to undercut Texas's law since it took effect in 2022. It is a major victory to abortion rights supporters who see the case as a possible model for how to attack these laws in other Republican states. The penalties under the Texas law are pretty stiff. Doctors who perform abortions could be sentenced to life in prison and fined up to $100,000.
It's unfucking believable.
Yeah. And, you know, as a result, women who had serious, serious, like lethal fetal abnormalities were denied care. Women who were at risk of experiencing sepsis were denied care. It's basically a law that orders doctors to, if they want to be careful, just kind of like not treat pregnant women.
Right. I mean, like, Aaron, so many of the stories we heard were pregnant women who were told their babies were not going to survive or were already gone. We're told to go home and just wait till their fever gets high enough that they can confirm they're basically in the early stages of sepsis and then come back to the hospital, and that's when they could treat them. What? I mean, so and ridiculous. The fact too that in order to make the point about how inhumane and catastrophic these laws are, these women have to be re-traumatized and tell the stories publicly in court to explain what has happened and why these are wrong. But we appreciate
them. I'm just going to say this. Like, birth, if everything goes well, is fucking traumatic. Birth is like the most traumatic thing that most women ever live through. Like, it is so traumatic. I mean, it's, oh yes, it's beautiful, blah, 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 blah. Whatever, it is. Like, on the other side of it, you get a baby and then you get to go home and not sleep for 3 months while it just cries at you and doesn't know who you are. But, like, birth is fucking traumatic regardless. When you are being forced to give birth to a baby that will not live and you could have prevented that trauma, like, that is cruel and inhumane. I don't understand. And, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer, thank goodness, but I don't understand why there isn't a legal challenge to some of these laws from a free speech perspective, because it does seem like these laws are violating doctors' free speech rights, the right to provide, like, care to their patients as they see fit in accordance with their training and expertise. Like, seems like a violation to make doctors do
also
shit
like their oath. I mean, it's like, how are you supposed to see someone who you know is sick and going to get sicker and be like, come back when you have gotten much, much sicker?
Yeah, it's anyway. So, you know, the injunction was double backseas reversed. I think that's the legal term by the Texas State Supreme Court, which means that the Texas law remains in effect. But as this case proceeds through the courts, we might see it at the Supreme Court eventually. As it proceeds through the courts, it could and probably will have more implications for laws in other states as well. Oh, I wanted to talk about something else. Something that's like a little bit less serious than the life and death of abortion.
But we're a high-low podcast, so.
We're a high-low podcast. When they go low, we also go low. And then high again at a different point. Okay. So, you know, I never really was into the hot girl summer thing. I really respect the hot girls that did it, that pulled it off. But I was, like, beyond my hot girl years at that point. But what I can get down with is I think 2023 is just girl summer. It's just straight up
it is girl all the summer. Girls
all
nonstop.
The girls. Girly summer, maybe. So from Taylor Swift's Blockbuster Eras tour that is such an economic driver that Justin Trudeau begged her to do more dates in Canadian cities, to Beyonce's Renaissance World Tour, to Greta Gerwig's Barbie movie breaking $1 billion at the box office. That's a lot of bees. The entertainment industry is being kept afloat by projects that center girls and women and take their inner lives seriously. And that is very hard for a certain type of man to process, it seems.
Which is interesting because, you know, Taylor, Beyonce, they're not discriminating between red states and blue states. Do you know, Erin, that after Taylor added, I think it's 3 stops in Indiana, in Indianapolis, that it is anticipated that local consumer spending around her Eras tour in Indianapolis alone will generate $4.6 billion for the economy there?
Whoa.
Yeah. What?
That's...
What? Because guess what? Because her tickets and Beyonce's are so hard to come by, they have what is called a Taylor tourism and Beyonce tourism, people who can get tickets someplace else and they're traveling there. So there's hotel rooms, there's food, people are going shopping. I mean, the amount of money spent on beads to make friendship bracelets alone.
Yeah.
Is a boon.
I should have bought stocks in a bead company before 2023.
We'd be rich.
I would be like height of Bitcoin rich and it would be real money. I have a couple friends who have, you know, daughters that are a little bit older than my kid. And the cost of getting tickets to the Eras tour and the hoops you have to jump through.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to Ticketmaster in the U.S. It's so high. And I've heard about this with people doing this with Beyonce tickets, too. It is one of my friends priced out just getting tickets in Rome and flying there with her 2 kids and going to see Taylor. And they found, and she realized it was like going to all in cost about the same as getting tickets in her city.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So she bought the tickets in Rome and they're going to go.
Good for her.
they're going to go together on a trip.
But you know what I love to hear, too, is that, you know, there are a lot of like concerts that have been fronted by men and they make a lot of money. Taylor has given over $55 million in bonuses to everybody working on the Eras Tour, from the truck drivers to the dancers and everybody in between. Beyonce paid $100,000 to keep the metro open in D.C. so that people could get home because there was a terrible thunderstorm there and they had to delay the start of the show.
Oh,
I mean, just using their power for good.
Right. Well, we just need to convince them to lay off the private jet use, I think, at this point.
That would be helpful. That would be
super helpful. Another thing I wanted to talk about is, so the Women's World Cup is going on in soccer.
Yep.
I've decided Colombia is my adopted team. I love them. Absolutely love them.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, yeah. But the U.S. Women's National Team had a kind of disappointing cup appearance. They're sort of, you know, watching them play. Their loss to Sweden was pretty heartbreaking because, you know, I knew what had happened before my husband started watching the game, so I didn't want to watch the game because I knew what had happened.
Yeah, I get
it. But he said watching it, it was clear that U.S. was the better team and either team could have won. You know, like, mm-hmm. It was just kind of it came down to, like, just them's the breaks. But there's a lot of people with their, like, a lot of people who I don't think give a shit about women's soccer with their panties in a twist about the way that American women's soccer players conduct themselves.
Erin, it's exhausting. Also, you know what's so funny about these people? When men's team don't win, they say shit like, can't win them all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so weird. I mean, Megan Rapinoe did get into a very public battle with Trump during the Women's World Cup last time, which they won. And it seems like conservative America just is a grudge against her. It's so weird because, you know, if the men's teams were playing, they probably wouldn't be treating any of the players
ever.
Like this. I mean,
of course not.
I could see them. The only way that I could see them treat, if somebody was like speaking out against police brutality or something like that, they would probably get upset with it. But yeah, I mean, why are they talking about Megan Rapinoe on Fox News? What position does she play, guys?
They don't know.
You care so much about soccer. What position does Megan Rapinoe play? Is she on the left
position,
or the right side of the field?
The position they know is that she thinks the women's team should have equal pay. They seem to hate that.
That's the position that she plays.
That's the position that she plays with them.
Well, you know, now at least I think that it's fair that the women should have equal pay to men because they're, you know, now both teams have, like, disappointed us equally in the World Cup, which is fine. Like, you truly can't win them all. I think that it's really exciting to watch other teams have soccer being played at such a high level and to not have it just be a few countries with, like, enough money and resources to support a, like, women's soccer program. It's like a global thing now, and it's really exciting to see. So I don't know. It's just conservative apoplexy about women's sports is just like, you guys don't even fucking care about women's sports.
You don't care. Like, you don't care at all. But you know that they were like, can you just imagine their, like, text chain when they were getting ready for their show? They're like, oh, my God, put Megan Rapinoe on the docket because she's woke, they say. That's why she lost. She's woke.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
but they said you can be an activist if you're like LeBron James and win all the time. I guess LeBron's like never
ever
lost.
She was the LeBron James of soccer.
Of course she is. She's the GOAT.
Until literally this tournament. Like, she's won 2 World Cups. Like, what are you fucking talking about? Oh, my voice is getting into a high octave.
I know. We were howler monkeying it for Megan Rapinoe.
Ooh, you know what? We're going to talk about the Great Lakes region a little bit more today. Josh Shapiro, Hive, Rise Up. Does he have a hive? Does the governor of Pennsylvania have a hive?
Are we the hive? We might be the hive.
I feel like he's got a pretty substantial hive.
He's killing
in
it.
Keystone State. He's killing it. Pennsylvania announced last Thursday that after nearly 30 years, it was canceling the contract of an anti-abortion group that provides funding for deceptive crisis pregnancy centers. The group Real Alternatives
what a name.
Has received more than $134 million to date in state and federal funds. Governor Shapiro first signed the 2023-24 budget, which increased the line item from $6.2 million to $8.2 million, and then his administration separately revealed the end of the group's contract.
Bye-bye.
Ha, ha, ha. You're going to have to figure out a new grift. Shapiro said, for decades, taxpayer dollars have gone to fund Real Alternatives. My administration will not continue that pattern. We will ensure women in this commonwealth receive the reproductive health care they deserve. Pennsylvanians made clear by electing me as governor that they support a woman's freedom to choose, and I will be steadfast in defending that right. Way to go, Governor Josh.
Into it. Into it, Josh. Thank you so much,
Gov. It's
weird
to have a governor named Josh, you know?
I know. I mean, I guess he's like, I mean, he's my age.
That's how old the Joshes are.
Like, the Joshes are my age.
That's how old the Joshes are.
It's like Aaron in like 35 or 40 years, there are going to be a lot of Barbies running for Congress is my prediction.
Wait, people named Barbie?
Yes. Didn't you see the name Barbie is on the rise now that but the Barbie movies come out?
That's actually, it's a cute name.
It's adorable. And you know what? When they get older, they can be Barbie. They could be Babs. You know, I'd be Babs. That would be mine. I'd pick Babs as my nickname.
You would 100% be Babs. Shapiro has also been doing a lot of cool stuff for the people of Pennsylvania. Do you remember when the I-95 collapsed outside of Philly?
You mean the highway he put back together in like 2 weeks?
It's like 2 weeks. He built it back together in 2 weeks.
I got to tell you, Governor Shapiro is really telling on a lot of other people because you see how long other things take and you're like, okay, who's on the grift on those projects?
Yeah.
Because he showed us that when things are actually pretty fucking critical, they can get fixed pretty fucking fast.
Right. It's like this sort of like toxic masculinity example of guys being like, oh, that's guy code. It's guy code. We don't tell
yeah,
on this or we don't
whatever.
He's like breaking gov code. Like, he's like, actually, you could do this really fast and under budget, and it is not a big deal. So, yeah, he's a pretty cool governor. He's doing great work. I would say that I would allow him to be on this show if
Aaron,
he wanted to.
I feel like that invitation, we may need to extend that invitation in the months to come.
Yeah, the people from the Keystone State, look, they've kind of been the quiet workhorses turning a purple state blue and, you know, throw a little shine on him.
He's with us.
He's with us. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a really, really exciting interview with a person
yes.
working on something really cool.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who dissociate by attempting to pull off complicated recipes. Alyssa, I know that's you.
Truth. That's so true. When I'm trying the beef bourguignon, trying to light that shit on fire, it is that is exactly how I dissociate.
Hopefully in a fire-safe manner. You don't want to dissociate while
I'll tell you this. The cats are not allowed anywhere near the kitchen. I have played with everything from a match to one of those fire starters. And yeah, I try to be safe, I promise.
The podcast for people who should not be playing with fire.
Also true.
Yes. So today we're super excited to welcome this guest to the show. She's a journalist and podcaster, and her most recent pod that she's worked on is called Cover Up, The Pill Plot. It is a docuseries about illegally smuggling the abortion pill into the U.S. in the 90s, and it is so good.
It's a banger.
It is so good. I have never, ever seen the story put together the way
it's been put
together before.
It was unbelievable.
It is thrilling. TJ Raphael, welcome to Hysteria.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so thrilled that you like the series.
It was, TJ, here's what I have to just say at the top, is that I was in high school from 1989 until 1994, and this brought me back. You know, we covered this, so much of this, in school, but it was, I felt very seen, and it was just, I had never heard it put together in almost a narrative way. I mean, you make it a true crime podcast, basically. It is, it was highly enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like a true crime story. When I first heard about this story, I couldn't believe that it was true. It sounds like something that was ripped from an Ocean's 11 flick, and there's a Breaking Bad element. And I was like, wait, this is actually American history. This is women's history. I was pretty stunned. And yeah, I'm still kind of shocked now that even with the current court challenges to Mifepristone's FDA approval, that nobody's talking about this story before. I don't think a lot of people realize that the Supreme Court has actually already heard a case about the abortion pill. It was just back in 1992.
Mm-hmm. So can you give our listeners like a little teaser? Like, tell us, set up the story and lead us through sort of like the backdrop of where it's all taking place.
Yeah, so the pill plot takes place in the late 80s and early 90s. This is a time in American history when abortion clinics were being targeted by the so-called rescue movement, which was a militant anti-abortion movement designed to use physical force to barricade clinic entrances, to disrupt service. And this was also happening at the same time that the abortion pill, Mifepristone, then called RU486, had hit the market in Europe. It was introduced in 1988. But then President George H.W. Bush, as soon as it comes out, he moves to ban the medication. He directs U.S. Customs to confiscate any import of the drug, even a small amount for personal use. You know, normally if you get, you know, aspirin overseas in Germany and it's not technically FDA approved that brand, you can still bring it in. Not so with Mifepristone. So basically, a group of radical feminists who were being targeted by clinic violence teamed up with some national abortion rights figures, folks like this guy named Larry Lader, who I had actually never heard of, but Betty Friedan called him the father of the abortion rights movement. His book that was simply called Abortion was cited in the Roe v. Wade decision 8 times. And Larry, at this time, he's like this fancy pants, 72-year-old Manhattanite. He's super rich, doesn't really have to work for a living. I kind of think of him as like a George Clooney character. And yeah, he cooks up this like crazy scheme to challenge the government's ban on the abortion pill. And he talks to a bunch of attorneys and they are like, do not do this. This is so risky. You know, we think this is a terrible idea. But Larry's an optimist and he's dedicated to the cause of abortion rights. So he's like, I'm going to do it. And he searches the country for a pregnant woman to sign up to be the Jane Roe of the 1990s. And his plan is that he and this woman will fly to London, get the pills where the medication is legal in that country, come back to New York City, intentionally tip off U.S. customs, be stopped, be searched, have the drug confiscated, and then fight this and take it all the way to the Supreme Court, to hopefully lift the ban on mifepristone. The stunt, it doesn't work in 1992. As we know, the drug wasn't legalized until the year 2000, but a lot of crazy, other crazy stuff winds up happening in the years that follow.
Yeah, listening to the podcast, and you talked to the head of Operation Rescue, which I would not have had the stomach to do, I have to say.
Yeah.
And he seems to be kind of like psyched to be talking to you. It's a guy named Randall
Terry. Did.
He was like,
he's like, let me get a cup of tea. He was like so ready to talk to you.
Yeah, it was like the scene in a sort of like cliched action movie where like the hero gets to the center of the volcano lair of the bad guy and he's like, would you like a whiskey? I take my meat and sit there. What was that like? How did you get this super huge figure from the militant, scary, far right movement to talk to you?
Yeah, I mean, Randall actually was very game to talk to me from the second I reached out to him. Actually found his contact on Facebook, and then I sent him a message, and we then started talking on the phone, and he was very game to do an interview. He told me he's never gotten any bad press in his entire life because he
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
What?
I'm not kidding.
Because he doesn't read?
Yeah, he's like, because I believe in everything that I say, so it's not bad press to me, and I'm like, okay. Yeah, I mean, it was very challenging to talk to him. And I spoke with him at length for probably about 5 hours. You know, we only use very, short and selected clips from his interview because I didn't want to platform him and his ideas, but I did think that it was important to acknowledge and hear from this sect of the anti-abortion movement that was wreaking havoc on American clinics and is still very involved with the anti-abortion movement now. You know, as a journalist, we don't always get to talk to people that we admire or, that we like. And I thought it was important to show listeners and our audience that, you know, people like Randall Terry have laid the groundwork for the things like overturning of Roe v. Wade, and that they're still out there and trying to take this further. But yeah, talking to Randall, I mean, there was a lot of stuff I did not include from him in the show because it was, you know, downright offensive. I won't repeat some of it now, but it was, you know, some of the, you know, most terrifying ideas, I think, as it relates to, you know, the control of reproductive health for women and other people who can get pregnant.
But you can see the interesting thing in listening to the podcast is you can see what a truly excellent messenger he was at the time. He sounds like Papa Smurf. You know, he doesn't sound like some truly, like his words are menacing, but the way that he spoke back then, you were just like, I don't know, there was something very soothing about his voice. It was off-putting.
You know, I just to build on that, I think that you do a great job, TJ, of kind of showcasing the ways that like loneliness, charisma, and zealotry can sort of form this like deadly, incendiary combination. And like, you know, you have somebody like a Randall Terry who, like, you also talked about like other people who are terrorists with Shelly Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Shelly Shannon. You give us a little background on Shelly Shannon, the woman who tried to assassinate George Tiller, Dr. Tiller. Mm-hmm. She didn't succeed. Somebody else did later. But, you know, she tried to assassinate him and she was kind of like front and center on all these terrorist activities during this time where it was very, very scary and violent in, you know, the abortion care sphere. You gave us background on her that she was, you know, she moved around a lot. She didn't really have a community. And I can see you didn't like literally spell it out, but it was just like, I can totally see how somebody who was lonely and lacked community would be sucked in by somebody who, when he talks, sounds like a cult leader, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think Randall, I mean, in our first episode, it's clear like his goal is to get media attention and, you know, his goal is to reach as many people as possible and be as convincing as possible. And you know, he told me, he's like, the more incendiary things I say, the more media attention I get. And, you know, like you said, Erin, for, you know, some people who feel isolated, who feel lonely, who feel like they don't belong, they are vulnerable to those messages. And, you know, I didn't include a lot of Randall's background in the podcast, but like, he dropped out of high school when he was 17. He was from Western New York, a Rust Belt town. He hitchhiked around the country. This was in the late 1970s. And he was like a lost white guy searching for something. And he also happens to find this, like, you know, he goes down this rabbit hole where I think a lot of what drove him, he even says, like, I had this dream that I was going to be on the Phil Donahue show. Like, it seems
yes,
like
that was wild. God told him.
Yeah.
Like, what a dumb dream. I'm sorry. Dumb.
But yeah, like. He wanted attention.
He absolutely did. And I kind of want to, like, that's why I kind of am like, let's wrap up the part where we talk about Randall Terry, the, like, evil cult leader who history will remember as a crazy person. But I want to go into, like, other heavy hitters that are in this series. Like, it is, like,
chock-a-block.
It's like a Christmas special from the 80s where it's like, oh, Kiss is in this? Oh, yeah. Grace Jones? Okay. You have like Clarence Thomas, Sonia Sotomayor, Jay Sekulow, the Trump lawyer, who just like is like just the whack-a-mole that comes up every time something dumb is happening. What was the historical figure that you were most surprised to encounter in covering this story?
Yeah, I think it was John Roberts, the, of course, now Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. And, you know, his willingness to go to bat for Operation Rescue, I actually found like a PBS, I think it was PBS NewsHour at this time interviewed him when he was Deputy Solicitor General. And he's like issuing a defense, verbal on-camera defense of Operation Rescue and what they were doing in Wichita, which that is completely mind-blowing to me that now he is, of course, the Chief Justice. And there were some surprising other figures that, like, actually didn't make it in. But, you know, this guy, Steve Heilig at the San Francisco Medical Society, who was working with Larry later to find this Jane Roe, he told me that he had consulted privately and secretly with a judge in California. And the judge was the one that told him, you know what, just don't tell the medical society you're doing this. You know who that was? That was Gavin Newsom's father. Gavin Newsom's dad.
No way.
Yes. Yes. So,
also starring.
Yeah, there's just like a lot of familiar, you know, voices that pop up. Like, yeah, Ron Wyden. And then you've got Chuck Schumer leading these congressional hearings. You know, we played some tape of the debate around the FACE Act with Bernie Sanders chiming in there. So it's just like, you know, I said at one point in the podcast, you know, they say that history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. And, you know, this story rhymes so much you could almost drop a beat. So there's so many familiar faces.
TJ. It's like rhyming the same words with each other. It's like rhyming words with themselves. It's like history doesn't repeat, it rhymes because it's all the same fucking people. Saying the same thing.
Yeah.
TJ, one thing I thought was so important about your podcast is that I think that for people who are say younger than me and weren't in high school when a lot of this was happening, it is a reminder of how truly violent the anti-abortion movement was back then. I mean, when you talk about in the span of 7 years, 60 clinics are hit with arsen or acid, that this Shelley Shannon maniac was literally communicating with murderers in prison to figure out how they did what they did. That was, you know, I remember hearing that on the news when I was growing up. And I think now so much of what we have is online that it feels very removed and kind of remote and like arm's length. But it was fucking violent back then.
Yeah, it was incredibly violent. Like 1993, 1994 are the most violent periods on record in American history for abortion access. Multiple people shot. And there was a real reluctance until sort of the later part of the Clinton term, definitely obviously under George H.W. Bush. And then I think early in Clinton's presidency was still like kind of learning about it. Again, this was 93, 94. But like in the George H.W. Bush years, you know, the FBI director was very reluctant and reticent mm-hmm. to consider this domestic terrorism. They said, right. you know, this is not the activity of a discernible organized group. And, you know, I think unfortunately we see, you know, echoes of that today with, you know, the white supremacist terrorists that we see unfortunately frequently throughout the United States and how we categorize what crimes we call terrorism and what we don't. So yeah, it was a really frightening time. And, you know, in our final episode, as, you know, I was interviewing Randall about what's next, you know, he told me there's a movement afoot to overturn the FACE Act, which is the Freedom to Access Clinic Entrances Act. And that gives, you know, federal protection to people trying to enter clinics. It makes it a federal crime to use force, the threat of force to block people from getting reproductive health services. And Randall says, you know, well, now that abortion is not a constitutional right, why should this be a federal law? So for me, you know, if you know,
terrifying.
FACE, yeah, if FACE were overturned, we could be returning to an era in which massive clinic blockades and the threat of, you know, physical force against clinics returns. And if they are successful in removing mifepristone, then all abortion is returning to clinics. And so it's, you know, looking like a period back from 1989, that's very scary. And I think that's something to watch for the future, what happens, if anything, with the FACE Act.
Yeah, I would say that it doesn't necessarily mean that all abortion is returning to clinics. It means people are going to try that shit at home. Like, mm, if right. people are blockading abortion clinics, if they're, like, you know, giving up your identity, like, blasting your identity online, who's going to get abortion care, whatever, people are going to... People who are pregnant and don't want to be are desperate to not be pregnant. Right. And people are going to have unsafe abortions, like unsafe abortions, self-administered at home. And we're like already seeing it happen in places like Idaho, in places that are super hostile to abortion rights. Do you see any red flags from the story that you spent so much time covering? Do you see like red flags that we should be worried about apart from like the FACE Act? Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the biggest red flags is, you know, we need to pay attention to the courts. We need to pay attention to, you know, who's in power, because I think as this story shows, when, you know, Clinton winds up being elected, there is a sea change. It is, you know, he appoints Ruth Bader Ginsburg to the court. He is then able to help usher in the abortion pill, obviously through the help of feminist activists like Patricia Ireland from the National Organization of Women, who were leading a huge Get Out the Vote campaign in 92, the year of the woman. So I think, you know, as we head towards 2024, it's keeping our eyes on that ball. And for me, at the end of it, I mean, this is a story that is, you know, there's some real desperate times in it, but I think it's also a story that inspired me. And when I first started working on this, it was a couple weeks after Roe was overturned. And I think a lot of other women and other people who can get pregnant were feeling, you know, pretty defeated and pretty down about the state of the world and how our country treats us as it relates to our own bodies. But I think this story shows that activism can pay off. It might take mm-hmm. some time, but you might have some failures along the way. You know, in 1992, the court ruled against them, but they didn't say, well, let's, you know, pack it up and turn it in. They kept going. And 8 years later, they succeeded. And so for me, I hope it's that something our listeners can take away. You know, be wary of the dangers that came before us, but, you know, take the victories and the lessons from those victories as well.
Mm-hmm. And finally, where's Leona Benton now? I know that you reached out to her yeah. and you tried to get an interview, but what can you tell us about her? Is she okay?
Yeah, so I spoke with Leona briefly on the phone last summer. I had called her and asked her to participate. And, you know, our phone call was pretty short. It was about, you know, 5-10 minutes. And she just was very adamant that she didn't want to participate, that this is not a subject she wants to revisit. She is she's 60 years old today. She still lives in the Bay Area. She's still an activist, still a self-identified anarchist. And yeah, I think the way that the media treated her back in the 90s was, you know, just horrible. They went out of their way to point out that she was unmarried. They went out of their way to point out this was her second abortion, that she was supporting queer rights, that she had a tattoo. And even that includes places that, you know, we think of as like, you know, quote unquote, more liberal than other outlets like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, like the LA Times. And so I can't blame her for not wanting to step back in the limelight. And she was also being harassed by anti-abortion activists. They were calling, you know, her home. They were calling the San Francisco Medical Society, saying that we're going to get you. They tried to, you know, go to the courts to get legal guardianship of her fetus, so to stop her from having an abortion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can't blame her for saying, you know what, I don't want to talk about it. I did my part. I put myself out there. And that's got to be enough for me at this point. You know, I wish she would have talked to me. And I would love to know what she thinks right now of everything that's going on with the abortion pill. I had said that to her. I said, I think your story can really help inspire people. But, you know, she just wasn't up for it. And I respect that, because after the way she was treated back then, I mean, I can't imagine why she would feel, you know, put any trust in any kind of media going forward.
And finally, you know, you mentioned you think it's a hopeful story overall. It's something about kind of resilience, tenacity. What else do you want listeners to take away from the podcast?
I want them to take away that, like, women's history is pretty badass. Like, yeah. I feel like we think about, I feel like stories about women, women's health, obviously not on this podcast, but like in the larger media sphere, they're relegated to like Women's History Month or whatever. But I think this story shows that women's history, reproductive health history, can be as exciting as an action thriller. And I think we need to make more space and time to tell these stories. And also, I hope people just enjoy it. Like, the idea of these like radical 90s riot girl feminists standing up to these militant anti-abortion activists and saying, I don't know, can I curse on this podcast? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
Saying like, fuck you, we're not going to let you stop us. And like, this is our reproductive health care, and we're not afraid of you, and we're not going to let you get away with this. I mean, I think that is incredibly badass and cool. And so, in addition to being inspired, I hope that people appreciate like the wonders of women's history in a new way.
I hope that for our listeners, I hope they all check out your podcast, because it has twists, it has turns, it's action-packed, and it's also highly fucking entertaining. Like, it was, I have to say, I have not enjoyed a podcast other than, of course, our own that much in a really long time.
Never a dull moment. Never a dull
moment. No, not one dull moment. Not one episode where you're like, okay, this could have been cut.
Okay, this is filler, blah, blah, blah. Nothing. This is like Netflix episode 6 out of 10.
Okay.
No. It's like all the season finale. It's
highly bingeable.
So good. TJ, where can people listen to Cover Up the Pill Plot?
Yeah, you can find it on any podcast app that's out there, thepillplot.com. And yeah, I hope you all listen and like it. And if you do, leave a rating and review. If you don't leave a rating and review. But just kidding. I hope everybody listens to it and enjoys it. And thank you so much.
Yeah, TJ Raphael, thank you so much for joining us. Listeners, stick around to listen. I will be right back.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast for when you're feeling petty or you need a little sanity. And that's a great segue into our final segment of today, which is Sanity Corner. But first, some announcements for the class. Have you heard of this podcast called WOD, Alyssa? What a day.
I've heard about WOD. You know what? I hear you on WOD quite often.
It's look, Hysteria is my favorite podcast, but I love doing What a Day. It is so much fun.
That's okay. I do not take that personally.
Good. Well, there's a lot of news to catch up on. And here's the thing. There's going to be more tomorrow. What a Day, Crooked's daily news podcast, is here to help break down the most important stories you may have missed in just 20 minutes.
Listen to new episodes of What a Day every Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Alyssa, it's just me and you.
Yeah.
This is going to be a loosey-goosey one.
Yeah, I'm feeling loosey-goosey.
I'm feeling loosey-goosey too. What is something that has sort of captured your attention this week in a petty way or a sanity-inducing way? Sanity-inducing.
Okay, so Erin, my sanny petty is both sanny and petty.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Oh, okay, yes.
And just like that. Erin, okay. I'm fully caught up on And Just Like That. And here's my petty. The show has been horrible. For like a season and a few episodes. It's like too much trying to be fit in. I really just wanted kind of the old show, but refreshed, right? Well, Erin, this week, they gave me what I was asking for. Aiden is back. Carrie is acting normal. She has realized Big was toxic. Miranda is an intern. Essentially, Charlotte and Harry have a thruple with Anthony, which makes their marriage actually interesting. And it looks like this week, Brady and Lily are going to do it. And when Carrie describes it, she says, please don't talk to me about this because it's like two of my stuffed animals having sex. This is what I was here for. I needed entertainment, not education in any way, shape, or form. Give me Che Diaz and Carrie's friendship, not Che Diaz and Miranda's very destructive, bad relationship. Mm-hmm. And I have rewatched the most recent episode twice because really, just give me Carrie and Aiden shopping for housewares at Williams-Sonoma. That's all I want. I want outfits. Give me Carrie. You know what? Carrie talking about an orgasm. I was like, oh, let me rewind that. I have not heard her talk about such things before. But it's like, I love some of the new characters they've brought in, but really just make Sex and the City entertaining again. And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have struggled through the first couple episodes of this season. But I'm going to say this, Alyssa, news witch or TV witch, you tell me. But in the first episode of the series, when Big dies on the Peloton or in the shower after falling on the Peloton, I told my mother-in-law that I think that this is all leading to her getting back together with Aiden.
You're a fucking witch. You're a fucking witch. I mean, couldn't imagine, but let me just say, at this point, I am willing to cop that the last 15 episodes over the span of 2 seasons have been worth it for where we are now. I wish we had gotten here before episode 8, but I am enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to a new episode dropping.
Oh, my God. I gotta say, it is – I cannot explain why I keep watching it, but I do. And I will, you know, slowly I'll make my way through this drudgery of a season. But I feel like this season is like the Sex and the City 2 movie of the
show. Oh,
like it is just
– see,
it is equally,
just keep
like,
watching. It's turning a corner. It's because you know what? Give me more Naya. I love Naya. I love Lisa Todd Wexley. They're great characters. Just make everybody fit in normally. It's like everything was so stilted before. And now I just, Miranda as an intern. Erin, I love it.
They have
I just love
Miranda
it.
Hobbs so dirty. so dirty. She does not deserve the way she's being treated.
She
in
was
the
baddest bitch for like how many seasons was the original Sex and the City? Like 8, 10? I don't even know.
It was 6 seasons, but there was like a couple that were in parts. But anyway, yeah, it was.
You know, and
it's fucking rude. It's rude what they're doing to Cynthia Nixon's character. I reject it.
But now she's taking over Human Rights Watch. I really, you know, post-Succession, there's been a real vacuum, a real hole in my heart, my TV heart. And I thought it would fill it, and it wasn't filling my heart, but it is finally filling my heart. And I am hopeful that the next, I think, 3 episodes are build on my excitement.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go back to just trying to watch all the episodes of The Sopranos. Imagine if they did like a Sopranos epilogue where it's like, well, they can't because I guess, well, no, they could. They could just be like, yep, Tony died. and like not
see,
really.
But they should do it like Tony should die and Meadows should have taken over the syndicate.
See, no, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus. Absolutely not. I refute. No.
Okay. No. I think my husband is a purist and he would agree with you as well, but I'm just riffing here.
I think a really funny epilogue to The Sopranos would be animated and take place in hell where they all went after they died. And it would be like, okay, like all the wise guys in a place where they all have like, they live in like a state of eternal torment, but they get to have like lunch breaks and hang
and
out.
It's and still like that scene in Goodfellas where they're still cooking sauce and slicing garlic with a razor.
Yeah, surrounded by like the flames of eternal damnation. Yeah. I mean, I would watch that as a web series. 5-minute episodes, I think it'd be a lot of fun. Something that's bringing me kind of a schadenfreude this week is just watching Ron DeSantis' campaign implode. The more people see of him, the more they're like,
why?
What is
– how do you exist?
I really feel like Florida voters, Florida Republican voters, because I know we've got some Florida listeners who are like, not all Floridians. Okay, fine.
We know.
Not all Floridians. We know. Some of you are fine. But the people that voted for him, I'm like, you have to have a screw loose. How do you look at this guy and think, what a cool, normal man. Talking like
nothing.
A real human, cool dude doing real stuff. I don't get it. He doesn't know how to act like a human man. It's so weird.
No, he doesn't dress normally like a human man. He doesn't talk like a human man. He actually seems to be repelled by people, which is problematic.
I guess that makes that explains some of the laws that he's championed and is just general. Yeah. He's just a little turd.
He's turd, and like, he hates people, but not in like a Larry David way. That's actually funny.
Not in like a funny way. Like he knows that he's being he knows that he has something wrong with him, but he cannot stop himself from acting in a way that is antisocial. No, there's no self-awareness. That's the thing that's like, how? And like I watched an interview or a clip from an interview that he did with his wife, and it was like, she was like acting like she in the interview, she said she was trying to make it out like he was a really great husband because when she got her cancer diagnosis, she's like a right. cancer survivor, that he picked up her kids from school.
Like what? Bare minimum.
Bitch, they're your kids too. Like what? I bet like that's a family that endorses the term babysitting when it refers to men watching their own children. Like
that's how deep she had to dig for an act of kindness when she had cancer.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, they seem like they really like each other. So it's like, okay, clearly he must have done other, like, how is this out of the bank of things you like about him, the thing you pick up? Like, why is this the thing you pick out? Like,
right.
Casey, WYD girl, what are you doing? It was so weird. I'll send you a link to it, Alyssa, because it's like.
Send me. I got to see it.
Look, I can't act. And I'm fucking Meryl Streep compared to her. That's when I knew.
That's when I knew. When he picked up our children.
His own
When
children.
I had cancer.
When she had cancer. Great.
So when I knew he really loved me, we were in this through thick and through thin.
husband of the year, I guess. I don't know. Like, how low are your standards?
That they seem low.
I don't know. I don't get it. But I am enjoying watching the downfall. Do you have anything else that's like kind of?
Yeah, Aaron. As we were setting up to record today, I've been following a news story that I think our listeners should know about. As they know, Mazie Hirono, one of our favorite senators, has been on here many times. There is a terrible situation unfolding on the island of Maui. Strong winds from Hurricane Dora are fanning flames of wildfires on Maui. It's so bad that 911 services are out because the cell towers have been burned down. The main street of Lahaina in Maui, Front Street, had several businesses have burned to the ground. Hundreds of houses have been destroyed. It's really terrible. They're saying all services are overwhelmed. Hospitals are overwhelmed with burn victims. So everyone, keep an eye out on Maui, and we'll see if there are ways that we can help.
Yeah, I guess that's like, I guess the sanity corner within that is we'll be on the lookout for ways that we can help.
Yeah.
And we know our listeners always step up, and so we will put that on blast when we have information about how to
good
help
information
people there. And hopefully we can make a difference to the people who have, like, at this point, you know, lost everything. It's really sad. This is also sort of like a reality of climate change. I don't know, man. I was driving in, you know, Los Angeles the other day, and I stopped and I got out, and it was just so hot. Like, so hot. I mean, it's hot here all the time, but it was just like untenably hot as I was walking across the parking lot. And I was like, God, we took oil and we made it into a thing, and then we covered all our roads with it. Like, it's a petroleum derivative.
It makes no sense. They should be painting all the roads with that paint that reflects the heat that could save the environment.
Well, then we need like super sunglasses, because I bet that shit burns your retinas
blinding
right off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all going to have goggles. We're moving into a future of goggles. Are you prepared?
I was born for goggles. Fits my aesthetic.
There's one more story that sort of caught my eye this week. And it was the Alabama boat brawl.
Of course I did.
Everybody saw this because it was like incredible cinema. First of all, it is filmed from like 20 different angles. And so you can see all of this unfold from so many different ways. Like, you know, there's a part where basically a boat, a pontoon boat full of white people was docked in a place where it shouldn't have been docked in, you know, it was docked where it shouldn't have been docked. And a riverboat full of black people was supposed to dock there. And so the a member of the ship's staff went over and was like, hey, guys, you got to move your pontoon boat. And the white people were like, no. And it escalated to a couple of the white people attacking the member of the crew. The member of the crew throwing his hat up in the air and reinforcements swarming in.
Swimming in.
That kid was, okay.
That 16-year-old kid who jumped down and swam across to help. God bless.
16 years old, swims across, pulls himself up using only upper body strength.
Right.
Then shakes his shoes off and, like, gets involved in the fight. It was cinematic, and it was mega viral earlier this week. A chair was involved at one point.
Yeah, folding chair.
I think that, like, you know, as a white person, watching it felt good because it was like, oh, these people, the white people, were the instigators who are in the wrong, and
three of the male Karens have been charged, which is great.
Yep. And in terms of, like, the fight itself never escalated to a point where people were, like, bleeding. So it was like,
no.
It was like there was a folding chair, but I could tell it was one of those like plastic IKEA folding chairs.
Right.
And so people weren't like breaking bones or anything. It was like an ass whooping, a pride whooping, I would say.
It was a pride whooping.
Yeah, for sure. And it was nice to watch. I don't know if the guy who was wielding the chair has gotten charged with anything yet, but If and when he does, I feel like that GoFundMe runneth over.
It will.
100%. Okay, what else do we want to talk about? Anything else happened this week?
No, that was good. I feel like we had a real gambit today.
We did run the gambit. I have to say before we go, I cannot get Planet of the Bass out of my head. We are going on a week and a half of me having a parody song from TikTok stuck on my head, or stuck in my head, and it's taken over my life. All of the dream.
How can you detox from something like that?
I don't know, but I'm going to be talking about it on Terminally Online this week for
good
Crooked subscribers. So be sure to tune in to listen to me be just completely unhinged about a parody song from TikTok. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa, what a fun episode. This was
fun. What a fun episode. Yeah, covered a lot.
The gang's both here, right?
Yeah.
The gang's both here. Thank you to TJ Raphael for joining and for making her incredible podcast. Everybody, please listen to Cover Up the Pill Plot. It is
so good.
So good. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. You can tweet at us if you want, even though we don't really use that website anymore. You can find us on Instagram. And thanks for listening, guys. There will be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okulate, Amelia Montooth, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter for more original content, host takeovers, and other community events. If you like what you just heard, you should check out The Stoop. The Stoop is an award-winning podcast that tells stories from across the Black diaspora. Hosted by journalists Leela Day and Hana Baba, The Stoop digs deep into Black life through reporting, conversations, and personal storytelling to talk about things that aren't always shared in the open.
The Stoop is a place to hear vulnerable stories that highlight the diversity of Blackness through history, storytelling, experts, and opinions. There is no conversation that's too difficult to be told. For season 9, we're talking about the stigma behind being called an auntie, a personal story about planning your legacy. They'll delve into the world of Black psychedelics and hear about what it means to not feel African enough. The Stoop, it's where you let your guard down and just get real. Every other Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow them on Instagram @TheStoopPodcast.